Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota in Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit Toyota on Nicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at LexusofLexington.com. Did you know that half of America is single? Hollywood has never produced anything like this before. The Dating Project, a groundbreaking documentary that follows five single people, ages 18 to 40, as they search for authentic and meaningful relationships. There is no script. There are no actors. These are real people trying to find love and happiness in an age of swiping left or right. From Empower Pictures, Paulus Productions, Family Theater Productions, and PureFlix, you can now own The Dating Project. Save the date by visiting thedatingprojectmovie.com and go a step further and help others in your circle date differently by partnering with Ascension Press. Visit shop.ascensionpress.com to acquire the companion study guide. The Dating Project Movie is now available on DVD and digital download on Amazon, iTunes, and Walmart. Please visit thedatingprojectmovie.com for details.
Welcome to Misfit Faith, where anything worth doing is worth doing badly. Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Misfit Faith Podcast. This is episode number 32. I'm your host, Jason Stellman. My apologies that this is coming out a couple days later than usual. My goal is to, used to be get it out on Sunday night, then it became Monday night, and it's probably going to be Wednesday before this drops. My apologies, I had a pretty busy weekend and just didn't have the time to record and edit and produce this. Our phone number here is 949-354-2483. If you've got a question, if you've got some thoughts, some input, something you'd like to share, give me a call, leave me a voicemail, and I will play it on the show eventually. Just want to remind you that my website is jasonstellman.com, and if you go to the blog page on the website, you'll find that this current series we're doing here on the podcast, Vaticant, the posts are corresponding each week to the remarks that I make on the podcast. The remarks on the podcast are a bit fuller and deeper, and the posts are a bit more streamlined. But nevertheless, if you are interested in what you're hearing and want to look more closely at it, then you can find all of that at jasonstellman.com/blog. Also, I just want to remind you that the Misfit Faith community on Facebook, which is a private group on Facebook, we are currently going through Brian McLaren's book, The Great Spiritual Migration, and we're almost done, and we'll be starting something new in the next few weeks. So if you're not a member of the Misfit Faith community, that's definitely something you're going to want to think about. It's a chance to participate in a live chat that's led by me, and you can ask questions, you can make comments during the chat. If you're not able to join live, you can access it archived anytime you want to. And it's a great way to connect with other people who are fellow spiritual vagabonds and misfits like the rest of us, as well as talk about interesting, provocative, spiritual, and theological topics. The way to join is to go to patreon.com/Jason Stellman, which is where you find my Patreon page, which is the main way that you can support the work that I do. And there are various levels that you can join at. Misfit Faith Community membership is given to everyone who's a $10 patron or above. And so if you are interested in that, and if the work I do has been beneficial to you, then that might be something to consider, especially given that we're going to be starting a new book pretty soon. All right, enough promo. Let's get on with it. As you know, we began a few weeks ago a new series here on the Misfit Faith podcast called Vaticants, Catholicism Without All the Uplifting Parts. And in this, what I'm trying to do is incorporate into my own Catholic-ish worldview some of the thoughts of the various thinkers, writers, theologians, philosophers that I've been reading over the last several years. And so we're incorporating ideas like divine nonviolence, religionless Christianity, radical theology, quantum theory. And we're sort of seeing how these kinds of seemingly disparate ideas can all inform our spirituality. And this week we're on week four, which is called The Death of God. Now, we've seen thus far in this series that we've been doing that we as humans sense within ourselves a kind of lack, a void. And furthermore, we sort of assume that this void is unnatural. We assume that this void is some sort of intruder, something that's not welcome, something that's not supposed to be there. And so we have what I've criticized recently, in recent weeks, this sort of serpentine gospel, this gospel that originated with the serpent in the creation record in Genesis chapter 3. And this idea, this gospel that we hear, built on the assumption that this void or this lack we feel is unwelcome and shouldn't be there, is basically you've been trying to fill the void with all kinds of things, sex, drugs, alcohol, relationships, fame, money, power, whatever. And while you're correct in seeking to fill the void, you're incorrect in how you're going about it. Only Jesus, we are told, only Jesus can fill that void and give you the sense of completeness and well-being that you should have. Right? And I'm sure if any of you have set foot in a church any time in your life, you've heard some version of that gospel. Now, I suggested last week and have been suggesting that this void, far from being some unnatural, unwelcome surprise or disruption, instead is intrinsic to the nature of reality itself. Right? And so this idea, you know, that I just described, that this sense of incompleteness is an intruder and it's wrong. It can be overcome if we just do X, Y, or Z, you know, be baptized, ask Jesus into our hearts, whatever. That is fundamentally mistaken. And last week I spoke with Diarmid Omurku about quantum theory and his book Quantum Theology, and seeking to show how quantum mechanics can actually answer some of these questions for us and show us that there is hardwired into the very bones of the world, as it were, a sense of mystery, a sense of incompleteness, a sense of unknowing and ambiguity. So there is no utopian state just around the corner. That's the point that I have been trying to make. And so if, as I've suggested, the gospel involves embracing rather than avoiding the void, then how do we do this? How do we even start? Where to begin? Well, call me a conservative, but how about with Jesus? I mean, Paul said to the Corinthians that when I was among you, I determined to know nothing except Jesus Christ and him crucified. Well, the cross seems to be a pretty safe place to begin. So to get us going, I'm reminded of something that I learned when I was a student at Westminster Seminary in California, and that is this. All theology is covenant theology. Okay, so you may not have ever heard of covenant theology. That may not be something that is a part of your lexicon. That's okay. I'm going to keep it really simple and just sort of unpack how that covenant theology, and specifically Christ and him crucified, comes to bear upon this issue of embracing rather than avoiding the void. Now, the New Testament makes it pretty clear that on the cross, Jesus not only died, but he also killed. And more specifically, Jesus, by his death, put to death the entire system under which the people of Israel had existed for centuries. The regime of Moses, sometimes called the Old Covenant. Maybe you've heard that term before, the Old Covenant, in distinction from the New Covenant. The Old Covenant, that Mosaic economy with its law, its sacrificial system, its priesthood, its temple, all of this has been crucified with Christ. Now, why is this important? Why is this significant? Well, central to that Mosaic economy, that old covenant, was the idea that was initially suggested in the garden by the devil, right? And then illustrated by the architectural design of the temple itself. That central idea is that there is a sacred object that, if attained, promises to bring about the sense of wholeness and completeness that we humans so sorely lack, right? And so the serpent, right, in Genesis 3, assured Eve that if she just ate the fruit of the forbidden tree, she would be like God. And then likewise, at the very heart of the temple in Jerusalem, scholars way smarter than I will ever be, loads of them, have seen a connection between the situation in the Garden of Eden way back in Genesis and the architectural design of the temple in Jerusalem, right? So I'm not just pulling this out of my ass. It's a thing, okay? At the very heart of the temple in Jerusalem was an area known as the Holy of Holies. And this is where God's presence was said to dwell, and from which all but the high priest were forbidden to enter. Only one day a year, on the Day of Atonement, Yom Kippur, the high priest could go into the Holy of Holies and make a sacrifice for his own sins and for the sins of the people. No one else was allowed to go into the Holy of Holies. None of the other priests, the chief priests, none of them. Only the high priest once a year. And the prohibition to go into the Holy of Holies was very, very clear, and it's illustrated by this veil, this massive curtain, which was more than a foot thick, that hung from the ceiling to the floor, that separated the Holy of Holies from the outer part of the temple. And so this massive curtain was there to remind everybody that, you know, the sacred is separated from the profane, okay? Well, Jesus put an end to all of this by his death. This entire framework, this entire way of doing spirituality was itself crucified at Calvary. Now, I want to dive in a little bit deeper to this so that we understand what I'm saying. On the cross, Jesus experienced and embraced the very void, that lack, that Christians today are so afraid of, and that Christian leaders are promising the gospel can help us to overcome. Jesus didn't seek to overcome or avoid the void. He experienced it in himself, and he embraced it, as demonstrated by his famous cry of dereliction, which says, my God, why have you forsaken me? So with that anguished cry, the Gospels record that the temple veil, that enormous curtain keeping, you know, divinity safely quarantined from humanity, that veil was torn in two from top to bottom. Now, this signified an entirely new paradigm was being introduced, what Hebrews calls a new and living way that's inaugurated through the veil, which is the flesh of Christ. Hebrews 10:19-20 says this: therefore, brothers, we have confidence to enter the holy places by the blood of Jesus, by the new and living way that he opened for us through the curtain, that is, through his flesh. What is demonstrated at Calvary, therefore, is a complete upheaval of the entire economy according to which the sacred was thought to be some external object just beyond our grasp that, you know, promises to fill our emptiness and make us whole, right? Whether it was the godlikeness that the serpent promised to Eve if she would just, you know, eat that forbidden fruit, or the presence of God behind the veil, you know, that is waiting for us, you know, on the other side. This entire economy has been disrupted. This entire covenantal system has been brought to its knees and destroyed in the death of Christ. Jesus faces the void and experiences it to the fullest extent imaginable. And in so doing, he reveals that the magic genie that we've been expecting to save us from the void is itself an idol, a fiction, a lie. The temple curtain is torn, and behind it there is nothing. and yet as frightening as God's absence may seem, it's the best news we could ever hope to hear. Okay, in lieu of an interview this week, I hope you'll indulge my alternative. I'm going to play you a clip from Peter Rawlins, who is a philosopher from Belfast, Northern Ireland, and he's been very influential on my thinking. And this is just a quick little 3.5 minute clip from a talk he gave titled Salvation for Zombies, in which he is making a very, very similar point to the one I have done. And so here's Peter Rawlins.
Represented, of course, in the cry, which is central, my God, why have you forsaken me? Christ then experiences the gap, my God, why have you forsaken me? Experiences the gap. And here's the radical move in Christianity from this interpretation. The secret is revealed, right? The temple curtain, this massive curtain that separates the Holy of Holies from us. There were only a priest could go in once a year, whatever, and they had to do all these rituals, and they had a rope tied around them or something, so they could be pulled out if they got sucked into the abyss, and you'd come out all burnt up and charred or whatever. And this Holy of Holies, where God dwells, the temple curtain is ripped in two, and the truth is revealed. There is nothing there. There's nothing there. It's no God gas. Nothing. Nothing. What we are separated from is a fiction. It is finished. I want to dwell here for a second before I go on to resurrection. It is finished. So what we experience, and if we participate in this existential thing, if we participate in the crucifixion, if we participate in what one finds is, you know those diagrams where you have like a human being here, and then God here, on two chasms, and then you've got like works and various things here, and then the cross falls down into the middle, and you go across and the cross, right? Like, and you can jump over the top of it. That is a beautiful description of what I'm talking about, except the only thing I want to change is, instead of God, it's the idol. So we're us, we feel separated from the idol, and then the problem with this is where I think the theology goes wrong. Is that we postulate that the cross is just a better version of all these other things, whereas nothing else can get us to the object that will satisfy us. The cross does, right? So it's kind of like the Uber thing. No, I think what's radical about Christianity is, you know the way Paul says the love fulfills the law, right? It doesn't fulfill the law by being an Uber law. It doesn't put its big boy pants on and put a cape on and be, I am the super law, right? No, it's like love fulfills the law by existing in a different register, by obliterating. You know, so it's a fulfillment of the law, but not by being an Uber law, but by existing on a different mode, a different form, a different register. In the same way, for me, atonement is not the payment of the debt. You owe him, you owe her $10,000, right? And I pay it. I pay the debt. No. It's the obliteration of the entire economic system. It's the year of Jubilee. It's the forgiveness of the debt. It's not the payment. It's the destruction of the entire thing. This is what the world, this is what we all believe, that we are separated from the idol. We are separated from something that will make us happy, which will make us complete, which will make us fulfilled. This is rubbish. You can't be happy. That's the good news of Christianity. You can't be fulfilled. That's the good news. Life is crap. Amen. Like, I want to, as I finish in an hour or two, you know, tell you why that is good news. But I won't do it there. But the church is the place you go to find out you can't be happy, you can't be fulfilled. That's all a lie. This whole system is obliterated. Obliterated. It is finished. We experience the loss of it all.
Hey, Jason. What do you think happens after we die? Peace.
All right. Thank you for the question. Talk about keeping it short and sweet and pithy. Thanks for that. So what happens after we die? Well, obviously, I don't know, right? I mean, none of us knows for sure what happens after we die. And I'm sorry, I don't quite trust the best-selling book by that little three-year-old kid, you know, who apparently died, and I don't know if he went to heaven or hell, I'm not sure. These kinds of things, you know, that's not necessarily the sort of thing I'm going to put a whole lot of weight in or stock in. But, you know, one reading of the Bible would suggest that upon death, we face judgment and then are sent into one of two possible eternal destinations, right? You've got Hebrews 9:27, it's appointed to man once to die, and after this comes the judgment. And there are several other places you could go in order to get at least that reading or that perspective on what happens after death. We die, we open up our eyes, we're in the presence of God, and we are judged and either deemed worthy to go to heaven because we trusted in Jesus, or we get sent to hell where we are tortured mercilessly for all eternity. Now, some people insist that these eternal concerns, you know, where my eternal destiny will be spent, these things alone make sense out of Christianity, right? And that without this eternal component, without this option of either being rewarded eternally or punished eternally, without this motivation, without this factor hanging over our heads, Christianity makes no sense, right? A lot of people sort of insist that. But really? You know, really? You know, it's like, I imagine I was talking to one of my mentoring clients just the other day about this, and we were kind of laughing about it. You know, this idea that, you know, if I live to be 85 years old, okay, and I'm visited by an angel a day before my death, and the angel says to me, you're going to die in 24 hours, and just so you know, there is no afterlife. Just so you know, there is no hell, there is no heaven. When you die, it's just like going to sleep, you're just gone. Would I really, you know, assuming that I'd spent my entire 80 years of my life trying to be a good person, trying to, you know, love people and do the right thing and all this, in that moment, given this news by this angel, am I really going to think to myself, God, if I had known that, like, death was the end, I would have, you know, raped way more people, you know, and maybe kidnapped some kids, something cool like that. Like, I wasted all my life trying to be good, trying to be a good Samaritan, trying to serve and love other people. If I had known death was the end, I could have, you know, inflicted way more harm. You know, I could have, like, put cigarette butts out on my kids' arms. You know, I could have extracted and consumed more from the world. I could have inflicted way more pain and misery on the unsuspecting public than I did. What a waste. No, of course not. No one's ever going to think that, right? And so here's my take on it. Remove the eternal concerns completely from your mind when you're trying to live your life. And this is, by the way, this is just Dietrich Bonhoeffer's religionless Christianity that's kind of being channeled through me right now. Remove the eternal concerns completely and just love others as though the only encounter they'll ever have with God is their encounter with you. And if you die and open your eyes in eternity, awesome. You know, you lived a life that requires no apology. And so I would take a different take from Paul's statement to the Corinthians in the 15th chapter of his first letter that he wrote to them, where he said, you know, if Christ is not raised, then your faith is futile. Your faith is worthless. Your faith is useless. I would want to read that in a very, very kind of subversive way and say, no, I do not want to live my life such that the only motivation I could possibly have for being steadfast, immovable, abounding in the work of the Lord, as he says at the end of the chapter, the only motivation I have to do that is to avoid hell and gain heaven. I would rather just live that way anyways and try to make that my kind of default posture that I strike toward the world. And, you know, if I die and it turns out there's nothing after this, well, then great. I lived how I wanted to live and how I believe God would want me to live. And if I die and open my eyes and there is eternity and a judgment, well, then I'm not going to have anything to apologize for. I lived the way that I should have done. But I think complicating the whole thing with eternal concerns and an eternal sentence hanging over your head and a looming judgment and all that, I think it can just kind of fuck you up and really tarnish and compromise your motivations for living the way you're living. Because if you think about it, doing something to be rewarded for it is not selfless at all, but selfish. Okay. So thanks for the question. There you go. I'm sure much more can be said, but that's about all the time we have because we're almost at the end of our show. But before I let you go, I need a minute.
Now it's time for Jason Needs a Minute.
All right. I'd like to call for a halt on two things that guys engage in, especially. One of which is an action we do, and the other of which is a word that we say. Now, these two things, they're not like technically related, but the word is kind of like the verbal version of the act. And, you know, it's gotten to the point where these things only occur after something that's just super inappropriate, okay? The action is high-fiving, and the word is either nice or worse, noise, or even worse still, noish. There's just something about these two activities that's just really creepy and wrong. Like they only occur, you know, when one bro says to his frat buddy, dude, check it out. I scored some kick-ass pics of my own grandma naked, you know, nice. Or, you know, I've been thinking about using the N-word more often, noise. Or just book my ticket to Thailand, noish. Nothing that occasions a high five or a noish is in any way okay. It's always some super deviant shit that, you know, should probably be suppressed and bottled up and never talked about again. Now, if you'll excuse me, I gotta go get high and watch the Special Olympics with my friends.
This has been Jason Needs a Minute.
All right, that's our show, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in. 949-354-2483 is our phone number. Patreon.com/Jason Stellman is where you can find out how to support this podcast and the rest of my work. And the website is jasonstellman.com. You go to the blog, you can read the various installments from this Vaticant series, and you can also shop for stuff on there. You can listen to the podcast there if you want, and you can find out how to book me to come speak at your event, your seminar, your conference, your retreat, whatever it may be. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.